You might be right, you might be wrong. You might just think your life has gone on for too long.
Your knees get weak, yes it do. Your heart grows cold, and you're tired of doing everything that you're told.
Good morning. Today is Wednesday, September 15th, and this is the Urban Talk Radio 103.5 FM WNHH, where you will hear conversation, information, education, inspiration, and motivation from the American urban perspective. I am your host, Kingsley Osei, and my co-host, Shafiq, will not be here today. And in the studio, we do have a special guest whom I will be introducing pretty soon. Today on Urban Talk Radio, you can join the conversation on Facebook at Bold Minds and Twitter at Bold Minds. You can also join me on my Facebook page, Kingsley Osei. You can also stream this show on your smartphone or computer by logging on to newhavenindependent.org. City, Connecticut, please help me welcome Grammy-nominated my man, Jason Eagle, who is a producer and mixer of many, many, many of our legends and pioneers in this game. And today we will be talking to him on this very new project of Prince, which is what brought me to his attention. Prince got a new album out called Welcome to America, which is a hell of an album that I cannot stop listening to. Jason, what's good, brother?
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Oh, good morning, man. I'm just happy to be here, man. How you feeling?
Good, good. Feeling good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, definitely, man. Thanks for joining us in under the circumstances of Jersey Z.
Yeah, for sure. The little guy, keeps us on our toes, just like I know you got a little one that keeps you on your toes. So it's good to sneak away and chat about it on the radio sometimes.
How's he doing?
He's good. Yeah, walking around and jabbering all the time now. It's pretty funny.
Oh, he's walking now.
Yeah, he's just figuring it out. So he's kind of off of it.
Abba was taking a little shot at him because my little girl was walking. I said, look, man, that's because Jason always have him in his arm. That's why. you can't keep him off your arm, can you?
Yeah, he likes to be carried around. That's for sure.
That's what's up, man. First of all, let me congratulate you on an awesome wedding that you did that I had a privilege of attending.
Yeah, it was a nice, that was the first time we met. It was, we got really lucky because we got married and then we were able to have this big party with all of our friends and family and it was amazing. And then a month or two later, the whole world fell apart and we didn't see anybody for a long time. So
you caught the end of the COVID.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly.
What was that venue? I'm trying to get some pictures up from the wedding. What was that venue?
It's called the Anderson House in Washington, D.C., and it's like this old ambassador's house, so you had all of these interesting, things there, and it's a museum now. You can go there and,
Now tell us a little bit about the Anderson House.
Yeah, so I mean, Anderson House was this fun little museum that we found, or my wife Elin found, when we were looking around, and it was just, kind of this beautiful little setting where we didn't really have to do much, but just like bring some tables and some food and some music because you're in the middle of this museum with all these, interesting things everywhere. And this guy, I guess, was an ambassador, in the, early days of, America, right? So he got to spend all this time in Paris and Japan, like way back in the day, and so he had all these collectibles and things everywhere, and it was an interesting place to have a party.
And it was an Ethiopian culture theme wedding, is that correct?
Yes, for sure.
I met some very interesting people, and it was really, really, really a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, that was the best part about it for me, because I'd never been to a wedding like that before, and then I was lucky to have it be my own, right?
So yes, exactly. The performance was good. The food was awesome.
Yeah, exactly. It felt so much love. I was just so lucky to be a part of that.
Are you watching the show on Facebook by any chance? Because I'm showing some of the footage from the wedding.
I'm not, actually. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're not. So I'm showing the picture of myself, you, and your beautiful wife, Ellen. I really love this picture.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I love this picture a lot. And let me also mention that you are married to a very beautiful family, the DeBellers.
That is definitely. Know,
Abba is my adopted sister, whom I got to know under bad circumstances, from her younger brother's death. Abe, I would like to feature her very soon, so we can talk about it, because we need to keep the hashtag justice for Abe awareness going.
Yes, definitely.
All right. So today we will be talking about this album by Prince, Welcome to America 2. But before we do that, let me give you an opportunity to tell us about Jason Eagle.
Yes. So I guess, you know, I spend my time recording studios and things like that, right? So I'm a musician, and I started in this whole music business thing, playing in a band, you know, with my friends, and, you know, driving across the country in a dirty old van and playing music. And then I fell in love with the studio process, so I decided to become involved, you know, professionally on that side. So, you know, I ended up very early on, you know, in the early 2000s, starting in 2002 or 2003, working for Sony Music at their old music studios in New York City, which was a huge facility where they had filmed, like, you know, things like, you know, Nirvana Unplugged, and I think Mariah Carey Unplugged, and a lot of these big things. They also had these big studios, right? And so there I was able to, like, that was kind of like my going to college and all of these, you know, Beyonce and Jay-Z sessions there, you know. So, like, I was working as an assistant and an engineer there. And then after that, when the studio business kind of took a big hit because of the internet and everything, it still continues to kind of be, you know, negatively affected by streaming and things like that. So, like, when that studio closed, I kind of went out on my own, and eventually, you know, got, you know, a random call to work with Prince, which I guess we're going to talk about at some point, right? And so I went and I worked with Prince for a little while. And then I spent a number of years working a lot with John Legend, who I still, you know, I'm in contact with and do some work with now and again. And I've just been lucky to be in the studio working with a lot of great musicians and working a lot on a lot of great music, right? And particularly, you know, people like Prince and John have always, like, you know, besides making great music, you know, managed to use their voices for good causes. And so that's always been a nice thing to be a part of. But yeah, then, you know, basically, you know, I spend, you know, my time in rooms like this is my room that we're setting up, where we, you know, there are a bunch of fun music toys, and I spend a lot of time mixing other people's music and trying to put my little stamp on it and help them, you know, get out the messages and feelings that they're trying to get across. So,
very interesting. Yeah. Now, John Legend, whom I had the pleasure of doing some promotion and marketing for during his first album at Sony, I recall accompanying him to Foxwood. And it was him, and I think Life Jennings was also I worked with Life Jennings from day one.
That's great. He was like one of my first album credits. That's pretty funny.
Seriously, wow!
Life Jennings.
I spent a lot of time with Life, actually, like right when he was doing his first album, It Must Be Nice and all that stuff.
Yeah. He had a first single called Stick Up Kid. And I recall my old boss, who was a very good friend, O.J. Wedlaw. He was our national director, and I was promoting the album. Actually, him and John Legend came out around the same time, so we promoted them with their song samplers, as opposed to just throwing gimmicks of, you know, faces and all that. We actually had a song samplers that we put out there in the streets, and Must Be Nice, which became a big single, was actually on the sampler for a very long time before it became a single. So I recall we were doing a summer splash at Seaside Park in Bridgeport, and I was trying to get Life to come down, and they were taking too long to confirm. And I told my boss, I said, if I don't get Life Jennings to Seaside Park, I'm not going to be promoting him anymore, because I've done a very good job. The people know him. The people are demanding him. This is when he was fresh off the ground, you know. Yeah, so it was a gentleman by the name of Carl Horton, who ran for mayor of Bridgeport at one point. He was also, I used to own a limousine company. So he donated his time and service to go pick Life Jennings up at in Jersey and brought Seaside Park, and he did a hell of a job. You know, he watched people sing his song Stick Up Kid. He was very amazed about that, because we promoted that thing from the ground up. And and John Legend, you know, right along with John Legend, and I like Life Jennings a lot. So you did some work with him, huh?
Yeah, I mean, when I was at Sony Studios, one of the guys I worked under and learned a lot from, this guy named Rich Keller, he was producing and like engineering or helping Life produce his album. I think there were a bunch of other producers, but like Rich was kind of like, you know, a mixer who was like overseeing the whole process. So I was like his assistant. So I would record vocals a lot and, you know, assist the mixes. And, you know, I feel like I remember giving Life a ride home from the studio a few times, actually. So like, I spent a lot of time with that dude, like right in the very, very beginning. And that song Must Be Nice, it still gets stuck in my head all the time. That's one of those songs that just sticks with you. It's funny, cause I haven't thought about him in a long time, but that song always pops in my head. It's interesting.
It took a while for that song to become what it was, considering that it was on the sample CD from the very beginning.
Yeah, that's funny.
So basically, Life Jennings was your foot in the door, and you've worked with some amazing people, such as you did some work with Estelle. Is that correct?
Yes, I did some work with Estelle. So yeah, I did, on her album, which is called All of Me. I was her engineer on that, and I helped her, like, you know, kind of sequence the album and put all these little skits she had together, where it's like her and, you know, a bunch of friends chatting over this music made by Questlove. And then there was, you know, I've helped engineer the whole album pretty much.
Now, getting back to John Legend, you did some work on his last album. Is that correct?
I did not work on his last album. I was actually supposed to work on his last album, but I was booked on something else and it just didn't work out. But I worked on his album Love in the Future, which has the song All of Me on it. So that was like his big hit. So like I worked on that album for like a couple of years, and I worked on his album after that. I went on tour with John for a little bit and did some live recordings with him, and like, you know, went to all these like great places, like, you know, Colorado and these terrible places like Las Vegas, and, you know, and I spent a lot of time with John Legend in the studio and a little bit of time on the road. I actually met John because he was executive producing Estelle's album that I was working on, and he liked working with me, so they asked if I would, you know, kind of jump up and work on his record.
Now, that last album, one of my favorite, I can't stop listening to it. What is it called?
Bigger Love. Yeah.
Bigger Love is a hell of an album. And yeah, actually Zerai was born into that album.
Yeah, that's what
I was playing that album in the suite and on my Bose speaker, and the doctor was all, the nurses, doctors was all into it. It was like, this nice. Is different.
That's funny. Yeah, yeah. That's good.
And you did some work with Kanye West. Is that correct? What, yeah, at what point?
Yeah. So most of that was back in, the Sony days, and I was working at Sony Studios. That's kind of where Kanye was, he was shacked up there, doing, he did like a College Dropout there when he was in New York. He did Late Registration and Graduation. So I was like an assistant and an engineer on a lot of those. Like I recorded a bunch of stuff on those, and I assisted the mixes and things like that. And then like years later, he was an executive producer because he worked with John, right? So John was originally signed to his label.
Right.
And so we did a lot of sessions with Kanye for one of John's albums, for the Love in the Future album. We spent a lot of time, locked up in a hotel. You know, Kanye used to block out hotel rooms, right? And he had locked up the floor at the Mercer Hotel in Soho, New York City, and just built studios out there. So he was doing like Watch the Throne in there. And then like I was in one room and he was working with John, where he was doing sessions for John's album. And, you know, so that was a lot of time. I spent a bunch of, you know, a month or so working with them there. And then like I went out to Wyoming to work on when Kanye did a bunch of albums for, he did like two of his own albums, album Yay, a couple of years ago. It was like probably like 2018, right when, you know, we saw him being ridiculous with the red hat on and the White House and stuff. And he was out in Wyoming for like a number of months making his album, and I forget who else he was making albums with at this point. I'm going down for some reason. You know, like,
oh. How was it working with him?
He's the last time I worked with him, I didn't spend really much any time in the studio with him. I was in another house in Wyoming. But otherwise, and he's kind of like, he kind of is there in this studio and has a bunch of different people doing different things in different places for him. And he kind of like corrals everything together. And so people will kind of bring him their ideas, and he decides like what's good and what's bad, and you know what he wants to use, and then like kind of gives orders to everybody to do their thing. And then, you know, I thought it was great working with him, especially like in their beginning, or especially the time when I was working for John at in the Mercer Hotel days. It was probably like 2013 or 14 maybe. Watching him work there was great. And then also watch, you know, back in the early times of the studio, right? So when he was doing like the College Dropout and stuff, he would sit there in the booth with his like little digital recorder, recording his verses and working on things while like other people were in the studio and this and that, you know, working on mixes. And I remember like doing, we were there at Sony one time for a Common session, and Kanye was like making beats for Common. And then he made a beat really quickly that he really loved, and like jumped up on the microphone and started doing his thing on it. And was like, I'm sorry, man, like, this is my song now. You know, I like it, you know, tough luck, you know, things like that. But yeah, I mean, it's great watching, you know, I loved like a lot of his albums I've, you know, really loved. So that was always, you know, from a production standpoint, music production standpoint, it was really great watching him work and being there for a lot of that stuff.
It's a micromanager, like you have to have his hands on everything, in everything.
Yeah, I mean, I guess at a certain point, yeah. So like he was a very like tough boss, but like if you did something well, then like, you know, he let you do your thing, right? So like I remember like I was recording his verse for him at some point at one, and I was like kind of like a young dude who like wasn't necessarily supposed to be in charge of like recording vocals, and so he probably was very skeptical. And then like once I did like a good job on something, he like cooled down, you know what I mean? So like he'd be very hard and intense on you, but like if you did a good job and like proved yourself, he was like, yeah, please, by all means, do your thing, you know what I mean? He seemed to like be more willing than a lot of other people to give people their shot, but also at the same time he was, you know, really tough on a lot of people as well. Probably
you ever had to deal with Boo, his manager?
What's that?
Did you ever have to deal with Boo, his manager?
You know what? Not really so much, no. But like, there was always like a cast of characters like around him that like, you know, there are people like around him at all times, you know, like an entourage, right. I guess you would say, right? Like back in the day at Sony. And then like, I didn't see them for a couple of years. And then like, I saw them in the hotel and then like, they were all still there, like just looking a little older, doing the same thing or whatever, you know, someone's like, someone's the barber and someone's doing this and someone's doing that. And then like a couple of years later in Wyoming, like everyone's still there doing the same thing, you know, and some guys have moved on to like do bigger things and things like
right.
that. But yeah, they're all there. So
yeah, he's well,
probably saw him in the studio, right? Like what's his name was always around the designer who I draw blanks when I'm doing these questions, whatever.
Yeah, his manager's Akon's brother.
Okay, yeah. I know you're talking about now, yeah.
Yep. Man, your rap sheet is so long. I don't know where to start. I don't know where to finish. But let's talk about Prince's album, Welcome to America 2. What a hell of an album. I mean, I'm not sure how they are promoting this album. I'm not sure if it's an album that they just want people to just, Prince fans to just go out and get it. But this album was ahead of its time, I must say. Yeah, this sure. album is today, but it was recorded. How long ago was it recorded?
Back in 2010.
2010. 11 years later, we are living the life of the contents of the album.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's crazy about it, right? Like, it seemed to be, you know, it's some weird alignment of the cosmos brought this thing out at the right time, right? I mean, it probably wouldn't have come out if he was still here, which is, like, so interesting about it, too. It's like, you know, there's so many things, you know. Yeah, but everything he's talking about. There were other things we were working on at the time, too, that were all still, like, very relevant for right now. Like, I think, like, when we were there doing it, you know, there was a big, was during, like, Occupy Wall Street and this and that. So, like, he was, you know, talking about, you know, the bankers and the environment and this and that. And those things have only, like, you know, gotten more important. And now, like, obviously with, like, even the focus being in his city with George Floyd, right? Like it was, you know, really lines up with the things he was talking about and with his like, you know, love for and focus on like his hometown.
And why was it held back?
I mean, I don't know. I think he's a guy who just did whatever he wanted, right? He probably determined that he had something else. You know, I probably was working on it and, you know, I've had a couple of these talks as well with like, you know, other people in his band and, you know, he was just the kind of guy where like he would, you know, he would move, his brain would move on to something else. So like he was planning to release it, right? Like, so we were in the studio and he didn't really tell everyone what he was thinking, right? So like when we were in the studio working on these songs, it was obvious that there were a collection of songs that were meant to be together because, like, at the end of the day, I would make a CD of all of these songs in a running order, and that's, like, essentially what an archivist found, right? So I'd make a collection of all these songs in running order, and they would end up, he would say, you know, these got to be right today because they're going to go out to the line to be manufactured and distributed. And then that happened. But, you know, like, even... He would think it was done and then like decide he wanted to work on it a little bit and you know, then say it was done again and then maybe like, you know, forget about it. I mean, I know a lot of musicians like end up doing like working on things and not putting them out.
Hold on, Jason. Harry, where's that feedback? Where's that status coming from?
Yeah, that feedback is actually coming from Jason for some reason.
Okay, you can worry about that. Jason, you are having some type of feedback issues.
You want me to log off and come back on?
Yes, you may do that.
All right,
I'll do a station ID. Yeah, you may do that.
This is the Urban Talk Radio 103.5 FM WNHHLP. I am your host, Kingsley Osei, and my co-host, Shafiq, is not in the studio today. And if you are just joining us today on Urban Talk Radio, you can join the conversation on Facebook at Bull Minds and Twitter at Bull Minds. And on my Facebook page, Kingsley Osei. You can also stream this show on your smartphone or computer by logging on to newhavenindependent.org. Or you can also join me on my Facebook page, Kingsley Osei. In the studio with us, we have Grammy-nominated recording and mixing engineer Jason Eagle, who is responsible for the engineering, the mixing of Prince album, Welcome to America. Jason, do we have a better clear sound now?
Yeah, how you doing?
Yes. I'll say, okay, so sorry, we were cut off. So, tell us about your experience of recording with Prince on this particular album. I'm sure that did you do the whole album or certain songs?
No, well, I did some work on, I believe, most of it, right? So, essentially, I worked on the whole album, but there are other engineers and producers who worked on it as well, right? So I got there, and a lot of this album, like the basic things about it, the basic tracks, you'd say, were mostly recorded, right? So those are like a lot of the tracks are built upon Prince and his bassist Tal Wolkenfeld and the drummer Chris Coleman getting together and putting the song together that way. So like a lot of those bare bones were there already, and then I showed up, and so he already had like bass guitar and drums to lay down on those songs. And when I got there, he had started to add other things like background vocals and overdubs and keyboards and things like that. And then some songs were also like the Prince thing that he would do where he just plays, you know, everything by himself because he can't play everything by himself. But the interesting thing about this is that, you know, Paisley Park, which is his facility.
Jason, get a little close to your mic, please.
Yeah. Hello.
Thank you. Yep.
Yeah, so it's basically his facility is like the nicest studio I've ever been to, ever. It's just beautiful. It's an amazing recording studio and like production facility. And there would be people working in offices on graphic design and this and that. But like he treats it essentially as his home space, his home studio. So like he did a lot of what would happen was he would record himself, right? So like what happened when I first got there is I had like kind of this sit down interview. First off, like I didn't know I was going to go there and spend a bunch of time working on the album. I was only supposed to be there for a few days and interview with him, and then I ended up staying for like a month, right? So. The first night I get there and he dumped this old 2-inch reel from an analog tape machine in my lap. He pointed to the computer and he said, I have some things in the computer, some things on the tape machine. The last guy couldn't get them to play together, you know, work together nicely. Can you figure that out? And I'm like, just kind of left. And he was super sweet, said hello, and this and that. It was like amazing to meet him, right? And then he dumped this in my lap and, you know, I got all the files off of the tape into the computer. And just started working, right? And so, like, the way he would work is, like, I had been told that, you know, back in the 80s and 90s when he was, like, you know, working his engineer really hard at Sunset Sound in Los Angeles, she was, like, she needed to get some sleep, so she taught him how to use the tape machine. So she taught him how to use the old analog tape machine. So, like, he took that back to, like, his home. His part of his workflow just became like he would sit and hit record on the big old analog tape machine himself. And so he liked to record himself because it gave him like the intimacy and, you know, he didn't have to deal with like some strange kid from New Jersey being in the room, right? Or, you know, if he wanted to work with the singers, he could work one-on-one. So a lot of the album process was actually he would record himself or he would have me like set up so that he can record his background singers. And I would set them all up and put up a microphone and get everything set up on the tape machine or the computer. And then he would record and he'd call me back in and then I would get everything together and mix it and give him a rough mix. And so that's how most of the record went, actually. He was like, he kept things very intimate with him and the people he was working with. And then I would like help him, you know, translate that. And then there were times where he would sit down next to me and I'd record him playing the guitar solo, or, you know, doing his vocals. And that was always very interesting. But yeah, I mean, it was just a wild, you know, the wildest, you know, thing about being out there with Prince was that weird thing with Prince. He's this like, you know, cartoon character, you know, that we've all grown up with. And like, you know, he's in the room next to you where, like, you know, he'd pick me up at the hotel and, you know, drive me to Caribou Coffee, which is essentially a Starbucks, and, you know, we get coffee, and it was just a totally insane experience.
That is very, what's your most memorable moment from this session?
I mean, there was one night where we're in the studio, and, you know, it's Minnesota, right, in October, November, or December. Like, I was mostly there from, like, September through, like, on and off through maybe, like, you know, the following March. But, like, I was probably there in, like, November, December, and there was this insane, like, kind of snowstorm happening outside, and that happens all the time in Minnesota. So, like, people just, everybody's still driving in their cars. Doesn't really matter to them, you know. They're not going to stay home because of a little snow, right? And so, like, there's one night we were in the studio. Prince's girlfriend was there, the singer named Bria, and they were, like, you know, we were working, and I was mixing, and they were drinking wine. I remember Prince was drinking red wine through a straw at the session. I was like, well, that's a little odd right there. And then he's like, all right, I'm going to drive you home. I was like, oh, shit, it's a snowstorm outside, and Prince has been drinking wine. He's going to drive me home. And what he would do, one thing he would do is, like, we would record his rehearsals for his Welcome to America tour so that he could work out the parts for his band. And so that day, I'd made a CD of his rehearsals, and he puts it in the car. Like, so I'm riding in the back of his Mercedes SUV, and him and his girlfriend are in the front seat. And Prince is driving, and he's listening to his rehearsals of Purple Rain, right? And so, like, he's got his rehearsal tape playing, and he's got his girlfriend in the front seat, and I'm in the back seat, and there's a blizzard, right? And so, like, we're driving through this insane snowstorm, and in the front seat, Prince is singing Purple Rain to his girlfriend in the passenger seat, and I'm in the back, like, what is going on? Like, I'm this bizarre scenario in the middle of a blizzard where Prince is up front, you know, singing one of the most iconic songs of all time. And sit back here, hope that we don't, you know, wrap ourselves around a telephone pole because this guy who was drinking red wine through a straw an hour ago is driving me home in a blizzard. So things like that are way more memorable than the, like, studio experience, honestly.
Definitely.
He took me to a Vikings game once. That was ridiculous, you know, stuff like that.
So this was one of my favorite songs from the album. That was our intro music, Stand Up and Be Strong. What a powerful music.
Yes.
Talk to me about that.
So that one, that one's actually a cover song of another Minnesota band, Soul Asylum. So that's what's interesting to me is that, you know, this is definitely a guy who had a lot of hometown pride, right? And so he picked a band that, you know, a great songwriter from his hometown and felt like it was something important and beautiful enough for him to, like, record and then have, like, completely fit in with the rest of the album, right? It's also, like, something, too, where he, you know, what's interesting about this album is, like, he kind of, like, steps back and lets, you know, the women, you know, take the lead a lot. And this is another song where that happens.
Why do you think he titled the album Welcome to America?
I mean, like, he was just, like, I think at that point he was very, like, you know, he's a person that, like, you could see, like, when things happened that he didn't agree with, they just, like, disgusted him, right? You know, like, so, like, I remember seeing this on, like, you know, small levels, like, around, like, you know, in our interactions when I went out in, like, public with him. And you could tell it was, like, you know, something, you know, there are things in society that just, like, disgusted him. So it's probably just, like, throw his hands up, like, hey, welcome to America. This is how it is, you know. we got you know, the Kardashians were starting to get big at that time, right? You know, they were famous, you know, just for being famous and things like that, like right. seemed to, like, you know. So he's like, well, you know, Walking American, this is really happy. You know, people are distracted, they're not caring about the right things, and like all of these intense and crazy things are happening.
Now let's talk about One Day We Will All Be Free. I love this song. I was actually been dancing in the pool to this song. I'm not a good dancer, but in the pool, everybody's a good dancer in the pool.
yeah, for sure. Yeah, the movement comes easily. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure who played on that track. Actually, I'm looking at my notes right now. That was okay. The interesting thing about this album is, like, they sent me, I got a random call this past mm-hmm. January that, like, you know, hey, we found this CD, and I'm pretty sure this is your work here, and we want to listen to it, but they wouldn't let me look at any of the files, right? So it's tough to get specific on some things, but yeah, that's a great tune. My particular favorite song on the album is 1,000 Light Years From Here.
That was my next question. Let's talk about that song, 1,000 Light Years From Here.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the songs. So like I said, this is like 10 years ago, right? So
right, exactly.
I've been telling people I've been working, that I worked with Prince for like 10 years, and none of it ever came out, right?
So right.
Like I've only got a few like snapshots I was able to take, you know, against his will, because we weren't allowed to have cameras in there. But like, it's tough to prove I was there, right? But 1,000 Light Years From Here was like a song that still got stuck in my head over the years. So it stuck with me. So that was a great one. And that was actually a song that he recorded. He recorded it all while I was there. And it was odd because I was stuck in this hotel the whole time. And it wasn't in the middle of Minneapolis. So there's not a lot for me to do. It was like mm-hmm. off the highway in the suburb of Minneapolis. So there's not a lot going on. So I was in the hotel all day. And there was a day we didn't work. And so, like, I didn't end up going to the studio that day. And was just kind of, like, stuck in this hotel in the burbs of Minnesota. And I came in the studio next day. And, like, the drum mics are all kind of, like, out of sorts. And, like, you could tell something happened in here the day before. And it turned out, like, he had just, like, recorded this song on his own. And, like, it was one of those days where he just, like, put the tape, the reel of tape in front of me. It was like, here, put this in the computer. And it's, like, a whole new song. Mm-hmm. I was 1,000 light years away from here. He recorded it himself. I think John Blackwell plays drums on it. He was his drummer who was out there at the time rehearsing for the tour. And yeah, it's just a song that's full of great performances. It's super catchy.
Yeah, it is.
You know, it's like, it's got a, you know, an important message to it, right? That speaks to everything that has been going on over the last year. And so it's like, I don't know, just everything came together in that one for me, I feel like.
Born to Die, another very interesting song.
Yeah, that one's great. I mean, so that one, I think Morris Hayes, who's, you know, the first guy I met when I got there, he's Prince's musical director. You know, he's kind of like my first gateway into understanding the Prince world, but super nice dude, talented musician and producer. I think, you know, he did a lot of the production on that. And that's another one where if you look up, he's got some great stories about crafting that one with Prince and what Prince had to say about it. Apparently it was his, you know, take on a Curtis Mayfield type thing. And yeah, that one's it's got like a great groove feel to it.
You mentioned not having any videos of the recording. Who's could be the reason for it? Is it because Prince? I mean, we're talking about an icon. Is it because Prince doesn't really like that, or who was responsible for not having video documentary?
Recording? I mean, he did not let. You know, at the time, too, like, I didn't have an iPhone, right? Like, iPhones were just starting to happen. I had, like, a little BlackBerry. The camera on it wasn't great. And, like, also, it wasn't, like, ingrained into my brain to just, like, take a picture or document everything, right? Like, that switch hadn't taken hold yet. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, like, if that had happened now, like, so, like, but yes, to answer your question, Prince, like, had this distinct, like, you know, He didn't want cell phones in the room. He didn't want he didn't want cameras in the room.
He didn't want any leaks.
Yeah, he didn't want anyone documenting anything. So he was the one who was documenting it. He wanted to document it.
Okay.
A lot of it was just for him. Like, you know, it's never right. Even would have come out probably because he just like something he kept inside. So yeah, so it was his policy not to have phones and things like that. I mean, there's a phone, there's a hard wire in the studio. Like, I remember the phone would ring randomly, and you know, I'd answer the phone and be the one that didn't talk to Prince to know what his friend was doing. But it was just he had people there. He had photographers there taking pictures when he wanted to take pictures. Like, I remember he was doing one day I had to drive some people to the studio, and it turns out like one of those people was Misty Copeland, and that's because she was there doing a photo shoot with him in the next room while I was in one room mixing, or whatever. So like he was documenting things, but they were it was all crapped in there, like, exactly what he wanted to see.
So are we expecting any video documentation of to this album?
No, I wouldn't say so, but you can, like, there's some great there's a great like 60 Minutes piece on it where Morris Hayes and Shelby Jay, his background singer, they do their they're in the room like listening to things and talking about it.
What is Prince's favorite hotel he always stays at when he's in Vegas? Is it Hard Rock Cafe? Is it Hard Rock?
I don't know, man. I didn't get a chance.
I'm saying this because I think there is this one particular hotel that he stays. I believe it's the Hard Rock. I was there. I got opportunity to see him perform. That's because what's his name was there. Q-Tip was performing there, and he's a big fan of Q-Tip.
Oh, nice. So yeah, I bet.
He just happened to be there on the night Q-Tip was performing, so he came in as a surprise, and everybody lost it.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. That's amazing.
It was like when Jay-Z brought Michael Jackson to Summer Jam, and, you know, we was all like, we couldn't believe in our lifetime we would ever get an opportunity to see Michael Jackson perform it. And Prince just pops up, and he's this little dude. He's real little.
Yeah, he's this tiny little dude in yoga pants. It's pretty funny. But yeah, I mean, if Prince wants to get on stage, you know, no one's going to say no to that. You know, Q-Tip's definitely not going to say no.
So what?
I saw Q-Tip in Vegas once too, actually, which is odd. It was unexpected.
Very, very, very great artist. We work with him in our Universal Records.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a nice dude too. He would be in the studio with Kanye and stuff. He would pop in and bring beats for Kanye and things like that.
Doing a lot of work behind the scene, huh?
Yeah.
Now, what made you get into recording, mixing, and engineering? And I know you also taught at Institute of Audio Research. Is that correct?
Yeah.
What made you get into this? You guys are the best kept secret. And also elaborate on the importance of mixing. I mean, especially now, because of the very easy way of opening up your iPod and whatever studio you have in there, and you go to your bathroom or right there in your living room and you record and people put it out and they get all these hits on it, and they think they're all good to go. And people don't even realize, you know, that a lot of these songs are not mixed down. They're not mixed, and we are losing so much from music that sound like crap, and a lot of consumers can even tell the difference.
Yeah.
So I know I ask you so many things in one.
No, I mean, well, it's all, you know, connected, right? So like, I got into it because I love recording myself, my own music at home. Right. So I love and I've been in some really nice studios with the band I was in. So I had the experience of like working on my own with like my own personal recorder with a 4-track tape machine, and then also the experience working in a professional studio with my band. And like, it was just, I was very you know, at a certain point, my favorite part about like the musical process became the like the layering and crafting things behind the scene, you know, as an artist. So I wanted to get better at that and figured that was a good way for me to get involved with like other musicians that I could maybe make music with. So like I went to this school in New York City, the school of SAE, it's called School of Audio Engineering. And, you know, that's where I kind of got like the basics and foundation of learning how to do it all. But yet, like, as you mentioned, this is all kind of happened when I first started getting into it. Was like right at the very, it was like, we were already right past like the peak of like music industry where like NSYNC was like selling, you know, a bajillion copies of the CD, you know, in a week or whatever. And so like Napster had come along and kind of like taken away the, you know, shook up things on the people purchasing music end. And then at the other end of it, behind the scenes end, people were starting to use computers and they were starting to do things at home a lot more. So that got shook up on that side as well. So like, yes, as the years progressed, you know, studios started going out of business, right? You know, because, you know, real estate in New York City was expensive, right? And so a lot of studios went out of business. My studio, I personally worked at a studio, Sony Music Studios, where one day they just called the entire staff of the studio into a hotel conference room, you know, around the corner and just laid us all off. Right. So like that, those are, you know, those are the challenges facing the recording side of things that were all brought about by the fact that people could like more easily make music at home, which they should, you know, everyone, like if you're an artist right now and you're not recording yourself or learning how to record yourself or use software, mm-hmm. the basics of getting a microphone signal into your computer, then you're not doing it properly. Like you have to, especially if you're starting out now, if you're like a kid and high school or whatever, and you want to make music, like I think there's like no excuse for not figuring out how to get the basics of like multi-track recording, because you can do it on your phone if you want to, right?
Right.
So like people should be doing this stuff, but that also means that, you know, and it was, you know, in certain ways, you know, if it still is important to like mix things up, right? Like I mix like a combination of things where people send me files that they record at home, you know, sometimes very poorly themselves, and sometimes they do a great job themselves. And then sometimes I'm mixing things that are sent to me that are recorded in, you know, multi-million dollar facilities, mm-hmm. you know, that comes to me sounding great already. So it's like, you know, everything is different, but, you know, to be able to pay attention to, you know, the craft of pulling it all together is, you know, very, very important. Necessary part of the process for most things, for most, you know. But yeah, a lot of people, you know, they don't need it. And I've been sent things where, like, you know, it comes to me sounding great, like where if it's like an electronic, like a lot of like electronic, like dance music type stuff, where it's, you know, definitely computer based, you know, it doesn't need an extra set of ears on it, you know, because, you know, sometimes it's not necessary, but like there's, in more instances than not, it is helpful to have someone else who has like the experience of like pulling things together, you know, sift through your creation, like, you know, help bring it to another level or bring it a new perspective. And
who's the genius that inspired you?
I mean, you know, I don't know if you could say there's one genius that inspired me, right? There's different.
It doesn't have to be a genius neither.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I grew up, you know, riding my bike to the record store and buying the CDs and then, you know, getting home and then putting them on and, reading the booklets, like, and seeing, you know, all of the things that happened. And like, you know, so like when I got older, like I knew the names of recording studios, not because like I decided I was going to be a recording engineer and research recording at studios. Like I knew the names of recording studios and engineers because I was reading the booklets and credits and things like that. Like, cause mm-hmm. it was like the sound was always important to me, right? Things sounding interesting or things sounding good, you know, like there are different, you know, albums to me that like, just like every once in a while you hear something that was like, you know, totally out of this world.
Get closer to the mic, please.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you would hear things that were like totally out of this world, and you know, that was like inspiring to me, like, you know, like Nirvana in Utero, or like Bjork Vespertine, or Beck Sea Change, you know, where you'd hear something and it would, like, you know, be so good that you could remember exactly where you were when you heard it, right? You know, and so, like, for me, that was more inspirational. And throughout, you know, I don't know, I'm probably don't spend a lot of time reading all of the engineering nerdy periodicals and things that I should, because it's like, I think the inspiration comes more from just like the music itself when you're listening. And then, you know, sometimes you do your little research and what you should be catching up on to, like, keep up with the peers and things like that, if that makes sense.
Do you have to deal with the industry politics?
I mean, you know, last night I had to drive to
get a big gigs.
So, like, I mean, sometimes, you know, you got to do the whole schmoozing thing, right? You know, so industry politics, I used to maybe engage in a little more, but I'm quiet now and everything, because, like, I probably wouldn't get hired if I spoke out too much. But yeah, I mean, industry politics right now for me that I see are, like, you know, people, you know, a lot of artists maybe, and rightfully so, have to focus on other things like fashion and this and that to, like, pay their bills. So, like, you know, because everyone listens to music on Spotify, which does not pay artists. Like, you know, right. Everyone listens to music on Spotify and it doesn't pay artists, doesn't pay songwriters. It pays the record labels, who then get their own artists on Spotify very easily. And so, like, you know, there are things like that I pay attention to, certainly, but I probably keep pretty quiet about, because no one wants to listen to me on that stuff anyway. But
how does it affect you knowing that we're not buying CDs anymore, so we don't get to see the credits?
Yeah, I mean, that means that, you know, that certainly makes it harder, because that's like my resume, right? My resume,
right,
is
exactly
the credits. So, like,
exactly.
And even in some things too, they're not putting credits on things. Like, if you go to Spotify, they don't put mixer credits on things. So Tidal is a good company, right? Your boy Jay-Z that you mentioned earlier, his company Tidal, they do people right, right? They say sell you a high quality product, and they list detailed credits for every song. So, you know, that's there. But, like, you know, a lot of releases, you know, I don't even end up getting credits on, because just people aren't bothering to upload them to the services, right? But yeah, so, but every once in a while, which is a missed opportunity, right? Because, like, yes, as a kid, I would look at a credit, mm-hmm, and, like, know things were happening in certain places, right? And
the credits were everything for your next employment.
Yeah, exactly, right? And so every once in a while, I get a web, I'll get a message from someone, like, you know, a super fan or something, right? Like, or, you know, someone who loves John Legend will find my name and, you know, ask me to mix something through, like, a question on my website. So it still happens, but you could imagine that was happening a lot more back in the day when people were able to see credits more and they were a more important thing. But also on the flip side, like, you know, they would have had to write a letter or something. Right now, someone could just hit a button on my website or Twitter or something and send me a message very easily. So it's, you know, there's good and bad to everything. You know? Technology is good, and I think it's awesome that I could
run. Yeah, there's definitely a pros and cons. Who are the three artists that you've had the pleasure of working with, and without being biased?
My three, like, so we'll keep Prince off of this, because it's
yes.
Too,
yes,
obvious.
Yep,
that was
exactly
more just like an otherworldly experience, right? But
are we going to keep John Legend off that one too?
Yeah, we can keep. You've already talked
been
about
big.
Him.
He's been, yeah, big, and you've done a lot of, yeah, work with him. So that's like home
sure.
To work. So go ahead. Who are the three?
So I got to work for a few days with Bjork, who is, like, one of my favorites. It still is, like, you know, she's the gold standard of just artistry in general. So that was, like, amazing. And she was the nicest person, and everyone around her was super sweet. I got to work with her for a few days back at Sony Studios. And then again, I got to work with her, like, you know, long distance, because of another artist I work with who will say, is a guy named Serpent with Feet, who, like, you should all of your listeners should listen to, who was kind of mentored by Bjork. So I ended up working with him and her together on something. But so Serpent with Feet, he's like a new artist, new R&B artist who makes some really amazing otherworldly music. And I've managed to make two albums with him over the past 3 years. We just finished up an EP that'll be start to come out soon. But so you should check him out. That's been like a great, wonderful, creative relationship. And let's see, so three artists that I love working with. I mean, you know, I gotta say, I'm just scrolling through this list I have here. For me right now, it's like, it's more interesting probably because I spent a lot of time working at Sony, you know, and lucky enough to work with these big names like Beyonce and Jay-Z, where I got to, like, you know, see like the big iconic stuff happen. Like, it's very exciting for me now to work with, like, you know, maybe like younger or up and coming artists, because they kind of end up looking to me and, like, they have a certain amount of trust in me having worked with all of those people. And so there's a lot more, it's a more fun, you feel less like an employee, right? We're in your Kanye session. You're part of this huge machine and, like, I'm an employee. Like, if I'm working with a young artist who's, like, super excited about what they're doing, you know, trusting of me with their music, then that's like the most ideal situation for me work-wise, right?
Awesome. Before we sign off, I gotta ask about your dad, my friend, whom I had opportunity with chatting with at the hotel. Such a good guy, such a great guy. How is
he? Yeah, thank you. He's good. He's great. My dad's doing well. We moved a little closer to them now, so he gets to see his grandkids a little bit more. So he's excited about that. And he's a happy guy, loves life. And
yeah, he does.
I will tell him you said hello.
Please do. He's out there golfing, huh?
Yeah, for sure. he's getting the last of New Jersey's golf weather in. But he had a blast at that wedding too. Like, he just, you know, he loves the DiBellas, right? He's like, you know, he just, you know, my wife's father's story. He just loves everything about, you know, his new family that he gets to, that we've kind of brought together here. So he'll be glad to hear that you mentioned him here.
Definitely. Sending my greetings, man. And I'm looking forward to seeing you guys very soon for some type of reunion.
For sure, definitely.
My love and greetings to Ellen and Zeta. It's Zeta, right?
Zeru, yeah, Zeru.
Zeru, man. Yeah. I just call him Jersey Z, which
That's
was
cool.
A name that came up from our Alba, because both our kids are Z, so he just came up with Jersey Z, and I said, that's it.
Yeah, we'll have to get together so that they can hang out soon.
Definitely. All right, so the website is jasonagel.com. Please go check him out, find out more about him. And the name of the Prince album is Welcome to America. Please pick that album up. It's a very great, great album. This is the Urban Talk Radio, 103.5 FM, WNHH. I am your host, Kingsley Osei. And if you are just joining us in the last part of our show, you can follow the conversation on Facebook at Bold Minds and Twitter at Bold Minds. Also on my Facebook page, Kingsley Osei. You can also stream this show and previous shows on your smartphone or computer by logging onto newhavenindependent.org. Thanks for joining us. Remember, Urban Talk Radio is every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Jason, thanks for coming, brother.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
Stay blessed.
You might just think your life has gone on for too long. Your knees get weak, yes it do. Your heart grows cold, and you're tired of doing everything.